Greetings all, Andy Jukes here again. What makes a man give up a successful career in law and land registry and the luxurious trappings of wealth for a life on two wheels? The lure of the open road, of course. Miguel Silvestre has travelled through more than 100 countries, across the African continent, the entire Middle East and the Americas from Alaska to Patagonia. But his real passion is history and following in the footsteps of the Spanish explorers of the past. As a writer, he's published hundreds of stories, 3 novels, a play, and 7 travel books. I don't need to tell you what bike he rides, though, do I? For the past 7 years, he's been producing and directing TV programs about motorcycle adventure, including his Diaries of a Nomad series, which has been broadcast for 12 seasons already. He's a true modern-day storyteller, and has plenty of tales to share on bikes, border crossings, bribes, and the benefits of solo travel. Let's meet him now. Miguel, welcome to Ride and Talk. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak to other riders about motorcycle and way of life.
It's a pleasure, my friend. So, motorcycle way of life, how would you describe yourself then? A motorcyclist, an adventurer, an author, a pioneer, a nomad, something else?
I think just I'm just a curiosity guy, a curious guy, you know. I'm a rider. And I have been using motorcycling for riding for a long time. I'm getting old, and it's been, I think, maybe 15 years traveling on a motorcycle just for riding people how is the world I could see.
Yeah, and that's a good word there, curious, curiosity. So as a young man then, where did your curiosity about the world come from?
Looking at people and looking at myself, no? Because I was wondering all the time, who are these guys, where are they coming from? Especially because I was a kid and we were living in summers in the west coast of Spain, east coast of Spain, Levante, Valencia, Denia. I was born there. And they were a lot of tourists and very different people from of what I was used to see normally, you know. So I was wondering all the time, where are they from, especially when they're traveling a motorcycle. So I was, and I also was a big reader. When I was a kid, my parents, they have a bookshop, no? And my father is lawyer and my mother is doctor, but what is, they have a business because they wanted themselves to read, to have the access to books, no? So when I was a kid, my best toys, they were books. So I used to read, and I think the curiosity comes from that.
This curiosity, it obviously led to you becoming interested in motorcycling somehow, but why motorcycles rather than cars, buses, trains for traveling?
Because my father, He had motorcycles. When I was a kid, he had a lot of big motorcycles when they are not very popular in Spain. So I was used to see big motorcycle at home. And when I was maybe 7 years old, he gave me as a present a toy motorcycle, but it's a real motorcycle. It was called Montesa Cota 25. It's off-road. Big, tiny motorcycle, but I learned how to ride in that motorcycle when I was very young.
So what led you to a BMW GS then?
Oh, it's a long story, because when I was maybe 35 or something like that, I had a good job, I was earning good money, and then my father and I, we were buying more or less the same motorcycle. No? And just to ride together. And we bought a Ducati Monster, SR2, we bought a Buell, and we also bought a Harley Davidson Night Rod. He's still riding that motorcycle, but I had an accident with that motorcycle. The Harley Davidson V-Road, the former version with no ABS, it has a very strange geometry. It's too long, it's too heavy, and when you hit the brakes, the fork doesn't go down. It's just blocked. The front wheel usually used to block. So I fell down with that motorcycle and I broke an elbow. Yeah, so I had a bad accident and my elbow was broken. I had to stop motorcycling for a while. And I was thinking about what I'm gonna do when I get recovered. When I recover myself, what I'm gonna do? I think I don't want to ride another motorcycle with no ABS. I have to buy a motorcycle with ABS. And then I remember when I was reading the motorcycle magazines in the 80s, that BMW was the brand which introduced ABS in motorcycling. Now everyone, every brand has ABS. But that, in that time, I remember, okay, BMW has good ABS. So I went to the dealership, I sold my GS, my Harley Davidson, and I bought a GS 1200 from 2005. It was pre-owned, no? Second-hand. And I still have that motorcycle. I bought it in 2009. And it's the motorcycle which I used to ride for the television movies. It's called La Gorda. And now it's totally different because it was built and customized and everything. It's like a monster bike. But it's the same engine that I bought in that time, and that motorcycle changed my life completely. Once I put on the motorcycle, I felt the desire of traveling.
That's interesting, yeah. So it really inspired you. Now, you mentioned at the time that you were working, you had a good job. So what was it that made you leave this comfortable world behind?
It was that after my accident, I was lying on the bench where the physiotherapist, I don't know how to say in English, is a the guy who's putting your muscles again, yeah, the physio, no? He was working on my elbow and he was hurting me. It was not a good time. And I was thinking on lying there, I don't want to be here. But I don't want to be here, not just in this bed. I don't want to be here doing this, no? In this life, this kind of life, because I was going to be 40, I was 39. The big crisis came to me. So I think I'm single, I have no children, I have no debt, I have no obligation, I have still money safe in the bank. What I can do is earning more money, but this is not earning more life. So I want to do something else. So I just asked for a sabbatic year because I was working as a public job, no? But I asked for a sabbatical year just to write a book, a novel, because I used to write some books before, but then as I quit my job, I thought, okay, it's good time for traveling abroad. And I took my motorcycle and went to Ireland. And I spent the whole summer in Ireland learning English, not with profitable. It's my English is like
it's good, man.
rust tool of traveler. But it's enough to get on, to get by with people. I can understand. And I think I can be understood. But my accent, I know it's terrible. It's a very Spanish strong accent.
Hey, but I always like celebrating differences, man.
Yeah, so we understand each other. So I went to Ireland, and then I found the story of the Spaniards who were there sailing in the Spanish Armada who tried to invade you, no, in the 15th century. And they were a lot of shipwrecks along the Irish coast. So I decided to follow those tracks on my motorcycle, writing an article, and suddenly I published my article in the big newspaper in Spain because the story was really unknown. And then I discovered that traveling on a motorcycle, living my dream, living my own experience, mixed with a historical way of studying or telling people about explorers, former explorers from the past, was something really interesting for to be read. And then I started this kind of work, and it worked for me.
Fantastic.
So they have a lot of shipwrecks. About 8,000 Spaniards died there. So it's a story not well known in Spain, and I wanted to tell that story, and then I started a track, and I followed that track, and I've been traveling all over the world, US, Africa, Asia, telling people about what the Spaniards did, no, in the former times. But now I can tell about every kind of explorers from all the world.
This is fantastic. So describe to me the feeling of publishing your first ever article, selling your first ever article to, what, did you say it was Spanish newspaper or?
Yeah, ABC is called, it's one of the main newspaper in Spain. And they got interested in my story and I published that story there. And since then I've been publishing, now I'm making a TV show for the, like your BBC, your BBC Two, no? I do something like that. In Spain, it's a mix between long way round and but also historical point of view about the travels, no? about trips. So I'm mixing culture. I got an award last year as the best cultural TV show in Spain. 2020, it's something incredible.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. So when you did this original first journey and you sold your story, was that the moment when you decided to plan a much bigger journey?
No. Because once I did this Irish trip, it finished in summer. In winter, it's not fun to ride motorcycling in Ireland. So I went back to Spain and I thought, where can I go? No, because I want to keep me traveling on a motorcycle, but at the same time, I want to keep me studying English. So I decided to go to US to do the, in winter, the coast-to-coast trip by the border, the Mexican border. And the weather is good there. It's perfect weather for riding motorcycle. It's a little bit cool, but it's sunny, so it's perfect. So then I did this trip. It was my first long trip crossing the US from Miami to San Francisco. It was maybe 2 months on the road, every day in a different place. It was fantastic. I found my place on Earth. So the best place is always on your motorcycling, just riding, no? It's a paradise, the best paradise. Because once you are in a place, you feel good for a time, for a while, but then you realize you have to leave this place, no? It happens to me to any country. I'm very happy to be in a new country when I'm traveling, I'm on a long trip. But once I'm there for a week, I need to go to another place. But after that trip in United States, I thought I was prepared to do bigger trips, longer trips, no? So after that, I crossed Africa in 2009. It was I bought R80 GS from 1992. I bought in Nairobi. And it was my first time in Africa. I was alone. And when I rode United States, I thought, okay, I am ready to ride in Africa. No.
Different story.
Totally different story. It's like, you have a driver license for a moped, for a scooter, and you try to pilot a Boeing. It's something totally, it's incredible, no? To be in Africa alone, a motorcycle. I was fed up of, I was full of bad news from the news, no? From the newspapers, television, magazines. So what do you think when you are going to Africa? You think, okay, they are going to kill me or rob me or steal me or kidnap me as I leave the city. But nothing it's nothing happened.
If you read the newspapers or watch the news, you never go to these places because you only have one side of the story and it can make you afraid. But when you go, when you travel, it's always a different story, isn't it?
Always. And I learned a lot in that African trip because then I realized the world is much better place than they tell us from the newspapers. So if you believe them, then you go nowhere. But it's a stupid thing because they are lying. They just, newspapers, they try to sell newspapers or to make you click on the news, no? So what they show you is the worst part of the world. They show you always war, poverty, disease. So it's what I found when I was traveling in Africa by myself. I did 14,000 kilometers and everyone was friendly, helpful. I got, it happened everything to me, no? I got bribed. I had to pay bribes to cross borders. I had encounters with policemen, with animals. I had breakdowns, failures of the motorcycle. But I was able to solve everything because always there someone to help. And I think it was the best learning about life. And then I just didn't stop of traveling.
I mean, you learn a lot about yourself on a journey like that, don't you?
Yeah, of course. It's something, one, because I know a lot of overlanders. I know of overlanders, travelers, no? By motorcycle, by bicycle, by foot, by car. Everyone is different, but there is one thing that is common to all of them. They have a huge self-confidence. All of them, they think they can solve their problems by themselves. Whatever it comes, I will solve it.
I think you learn a little bit of that by taking the risks in the first place to go, where other people maybe stay behind and say, it's not for me. These are the people, these are the pioneers that take the risk and just say, hey, what can go wrong?
Yeah, I think when people say me, you are brave, I don't think so. Maybe I did just one brave thing in my whole life. It was to take the decision of traveling in Africa for the first time. It was crazy or brave, I don't know. But once you cross Africa and you see there is nothing terrible, it's not a brave act to travel, it's a clever act to travel. Because I'm full of fears. I'm still, when I'm planning another trip to another place, I think about the things that could be wrong. But because I think fear is the best tool for a traveler. It's a tool. An animal without fear is a dead animal. Or if you don't feel fear, you are going to be killed soon. You have to be clever and you have to look. You have to be aware of everything. When I'm going in a trip, in a journey, I sleep very short time because I'm aware. Everything wakes me up, no?
You sleep with one eye open.
Yeah, sure. But you trust people, but you're not stupid. So, and it worked for me. And I think world is a good place, but the world can kill you, especially traveling on a motorcycle, because not the people are nice, but drivers are terrible everywhere. So the most dangerous thing in a motorcycle journey is not to be attacked or killed by bandits. No, it's just to be bumped by a dummy, someone who is talking by phone or arguing with their children. That's the real danger.
The kind of thing that happens every day if you're riding through certain places in the world, especially in places like India. That was my experience, yeah.
Yeah, wow. India is the worst place for riding. There is a club called India. I never do it again.
I think I'm a member of that club, but I still love it. When I think back, I still love it for sure. But by the time you'd ridden through Africa, you must have then had the confidence to feel that you could go anywhere in the world.
That's exactly what I thought, because I didn't know yet about Central Asia.
Yeah.
I did the East Coast in Africa. I did the East Coast starting from Nairobi. Then I did a trip from Egypt to Kenya again. So I did the whole Africa. But in that trip, I started in Nairobi and I crossed Kenya, Tanzania, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Botswana, then Namibia, and then South Africa again, Lesotho, Swaziland, Mozambique. But more or less, all of them, they were a British colony, no? Except Mozambique, where they speak Portuguese. They understand me in Spanish. They were very surprised because they didn't understand what I was talking, because they are used to see or to deal with South African white people who are tourists in Mozambique, and they speak English. And the problem is, I was speaking in a very strange language for them, pretty similar to Portuguese, but not the same. No, when you ride a motorcycle along a British colony in Africa, you can get on with people. People understand you because more or less they speak English. So it's easy. And in Africa, there are big gaps where there is nothing. From 500 kilometers to 500 kilometers, you find a city. And in a city, you can find more or less everything. The problem is, after my African trip, I thought myself, okay, I'm really ready for the adventure. I can go everywhere, no? And then I rode my motorcycle to Central Asia. I took my motorcycle, the La Gorda, my first GS, and I crossed Ukraine, and Russia, and Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, then Azerbaijan.
I'm looking on my map now, yeah. Tracing your route on the map of my wall.
Yeah. But what I mean, once I got into Ukraine, I felt completely lost. Lost in translation.
Nobody understood you. You know, you understood nobody.
Yeah, no one speak English, and I didn't speak a word in Russian, and I even couldn't understand the signals. Because they were written in Cyrillic. So it was okay. And then it was 2009. When I was in 2009 in Ukraine and Russia, it was terrible. Very poor countries, very, very poor. I was surprised to see white people so poor, no? Because I saw a woman working in his farm, like doing the job that used to be done with animals, no, or a tractor, no, by herself, a beautiful Ukrainian woman doing the big hard labor in the farm. And it was astonishing to me. It was something. What is going here? And the cops they were so corrupt. It was something incredible. The worst thing is to be in a hurry, in a trip, in a hard place. No, you are in Africa or you're in Central Asia, you cannot be in a hurry because maybe it's going to be problems with the motorcycle, bureaucratic problems, visas, borders, cops, or you are going to find somewhere or somewhere that you want to stay for a while, no? And you have to, or you want to take a detour and go to anything. But if your schedule is too tight, you are going to miss that, and it's going to be very stressful for you.
So just going back to the old days before you were traveling with a camera crew, going back to when it was just you, and we talked about, you know, how amazing it is to travel alone, because that's when you have the experiences, that's when people reach out to you, that's when you need people, that's when people, although you're vulnerable, they realize that, and they come and help you somehow, and they're interested in your journey. Did you feel sort of happiest in that life when you were a real nomad?
I remember myself, my first time in Central Asia, when I went into the desert in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, the Aral Sea, sometimes I had to stop my motorcycle and just scream of happiness, because I thought, okay, I am under the sky, no one is there, it's me here, it's me in this amazing place. I decided to leave my hometown, and then I'm here in Central Asia, former Soviet Union, and the Aral Sea, there is just dust, desert, big bumps, and everyone I meet, it's nice to me. They try to help me, and I'm living this dream. So it's like living inside a documentary. So when I was sleeping in my tent, and then I open the door and look at the sky, I think, okay, the world is just put for me, no? And I'm something incredible, no?
Do you think that it's the freest you ever felt in your life when you're on the road like that?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, but I love to travel on a motorcycle, but I especially travel on a motorcycle outside Western world. Because the Western world is so comfortable, we have tap water, drinkable, we have lights, we have everything. I have a car parked in my garage, my kids go to school, I have two chairs for my kids in the car, so everything is comfortable, but we have no freedom. There are too many rules, rules for everything. I was born in 1968, I was a kid when in the 80s, I was teenager in the 90s or the 20th century. We were free in that time. Now we are not free anymore. We are not only for COVID and whatever. No, it began 20 years ago. Too many rules, rules for everything. And when I go out, I can do whatever I want without disturbing people. Okay. Unless it's like you're going to Morocco, for me it's my backyard, no? I go to Morocco and I can do whatever I want.
And what I find really interesting is when you are away, when it is just you and you're on that trip, it's amazing how little you do need. Okay, for sure, you need some money to travel, but in terms of possessions, you really don't need much at all to survive, you know? So I'm interested to know, you know, if you also prefer to travel really light and live really simply, you know, without too many comforts when you're on the road.
Yeah, of course. I did the whole world trip, you know. I spent more than 1 year just on a single trip doing the circle. It was in 2011, 2012. I was carrying just three panniers and a bag. Now I think I was carrying too much stuff. In that time, I thought, okay, I'm going to live for a year in a trip. I'm carrying too little. But the fact is, with my three panniers and a bag, I was able to carry anything, also everything I need in a whole year. I didn't miss anything. And I had everything with me. And it was my home because I left my apartment. So my home was my motorcycle, and I didn't miss anything because I had everything with me.
Can you remember what you actually put in your panniers?
Yeah, more or less I remember. Of course, cameras and a computer for recording my movies. But I was carrying my motorcycle suit that I still have it. It's the BMW Rally 3. It's more than 20 years. No, it's more than 10 years old, my suit. It did the whole world tour trip. I'm still using it. I used it last summer, last weekend. And I was carrying, you know, few T-shirts, maybe 8, and two pair of jeans. And sports shoes, and nothing else. You know, something for cleaning myself, a towel, and a tent, a sleeping bag, a mattress, and small things that you need. No, Swiss knife, earplugs, not for motorcycling, for people who snore and especially flies. No, over you when you are sleeping. You plug in insect repellent is important.
A few tools, maybe.
Yeah, and something to for
cooking
warm
equipment.
No, not even. I didn't bring in that trip cooking equipment because you can find food everywhere. Where there is people, you can find food. So they cook better than me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
What I was carrying is a thermo, a big thermo. I fill it with hot water every night. Everyone is boiling water for tea because it's the way they have to drink water without disease. So they are boiling water everywhere. So it was easy to find hot water. And in the following morning, I drank instant coffee. Then I went for running. I did jogging every day in the whole world. It was an amazing experience. And then I went back and rent my motorcycle.
And how easy did you find it to live without, you know, those material things from your old professional life? Things like expensive clothes or your apartment, nice car, things like that. Did you miss it?
The life is so basic when you are traveling. It's the best way of living because your only duties are traveling, arriving the final point, and find a way, a place to sleep and to eat. It's easy. That's your life. You don't have your only duties are that, are those duties.
Yeah, it's nice to have a simple in the mind. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And what about your GS then? Did you modify it at all for traveling?
When I bought my GS, my first GS, the 1200, it was totally regular from the dealership. Plastic panniers, alu wheels. I went to Kazakhstan. I got the China border with that motorcycle with plastic bags and alu wheels. I was wearing sneakers. I didn't wear even motorcycle boots and jeans. And I did that trip. So you can do the trip without modifying your motorcycle. Of course, modifying a motorcycle is nice, no? You see your motorcycle full of stuff, Wunderlich stuff, and you think, oh, that's good, no? I'm an adventurer. I didn't need that.
So did you always write and take photos and films, or did you actually have to learn these skills while you were traveling?
About writing, no, because I had published a few novels in Spanish. You know, it's like a skill, no? You learn when you're a kid. And I learned how to write. I read a lot. It's not difficult to write properly to make people understand what I'm saying. It's like this conversation. English is not my mother tongue. It's obvious. It's been a long time since speaking English because I'm not traveling nowadays because COVID and all the stuff. So 2 years without speaking English. But I make my brain work to get understood. So it's the same when I'm writing. I'm a good writer. So for writing, I had no learned special skills for doing motorcycle reports or journals or whatever. But I had to learn how to make photos and video, of course, because I didn't have a idea about how to do it. So I was not a good photographer when I started traveling. But when I started traveling, I thought, okay, I have to take good picture of this. But it was easy because the sceneries were so amazing. So okay, I have to be very bad photographer to not making good pictures of this.
Yeah, you say that, but I always enjoyed looking at your pictures throughout the years because, you know, it's inspiring, it's evocative, and the idea behind it is it makes people think, oh, I would love to do something like that, or I'd love to see that sunrise, or I'd love to meet those people out there. So it's a big responsibility in a way. But what about the feeling of publishing your first adventure travel book? You know, how did that feel as opposed to the novels?
My first book of traveling on a motorcycle, it was about my experience in Africa. It's called Un Millón de Piedras. It's been a decade since I published that book. It's still my bestseller book.
What does it mean? A million stones or?
Million stones, yes. 1 million stones. Yeah, it was like the million stones that I have to cross physically in a motorcycle and the million stones I have to cross mentally.
So the book got you lots of recognition in Spain, and then the TV series, did that really take you into the mainstream a lot more? Was it The Diary of a Nomad? Or?
Yeah, for sure. Diary of a Nomad is shown in the public national broadcast television, RTV 2. It's the cultural one. You know, every day they show the program. 500,000 people watch it. People who make television normally, they have to do reality. But mine is totally different. I do a cultural program about motorcycle trips all over the world, beautiful people, beautiful sceneries. I speak well of everyone. I make people more confident about the world we are living. Yeah, it's something that I think my TV show could be seen by my children when they are old and they are going to learn.
That's a really important message, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I can be proud of what they are going to watch.
But I think what's really nice for them is that you've got this big collection of content that you've made, these books, these films, and you can show them the world through your eyes, through the places that you've been, show them that people are good, are kind, want to help you, show them these amazing places so far away, and then see the reaction through their eyes.
Yeah, I hope so, but you say apple never falls away from the tree, something like that.
An apple never falls too far from the tree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but at the same time, children do the opposite of their parents. So who knows? We'll see. No, I would like them to enjoy my content, no? But I'm not going to force them to watch the parents' movie, of course, because it's the best way they hate or their parents' movies. No, but
the nice way would be for them to maybe find it for themselves one day and just be really surprised.
I only want one thing. I would like to take them to Morocco or, you know, much poorer countries than we are living in Spain. They have very, very nice life. I want them to watch the real life, no? How real people live in the world, because 80% of the population live under what we consider poverty. So 80% of the population live under our Western world standards. We think we are normal. We are not normal. We have too much of everything, and we spend much more time and money and things than the most of the population. They have to watch them. They have to know that just pushing a button and getting light into your life is a miracle. Or opening the top and you can drink water with no limits is a miracle. A lot of people, they don't have that in their lives. I would like to be conscious, my children, of that reality, because that's the real world.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I still find those things amazing. But in a way, you need to take your kids out of their comfort zones to make them realize that. And they won't thank you for it, but eventually they'll get it for sure. Well, Miguel, it's always been inspiring talking to you. So listen, thanks for your time today, and I really hope to see you on the road soon. Take care, my friend.
Okay, Andy, it's been a pleasure to speak with you and with your listeners. I hope they forgive me because my terrible English.
No, your English is fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Take care, my friend.
Okay, see you.
Cheers, Miguel. What a great way to live life. To follow in the footsteps of those lost explorers, telling their stories while creating your own. I'm sure fatherhood won't slow you down too much, especially when there are so many stories to share about the kindness of strangers, the wonders of overland travel, and how little you really need to make life a ride. There are so many places to still see out there, and so little time, so it's really up to us to make it happen, isn't it? Right, I'm off to plan my next adventure. How about you? We'll be back soon with the next episode. So until then, take care out there and enjoy the ride wherever it takes you. Bye for now.